The Washington Post recently reported that cities around the country are losing money on recycling, that recycling is no longer profitable, and that some cities are paying to dispose of their recyclables. Today on Your Call, we'll learn about changes in the recycling industry and how they affect what happens after you toss that paper and plastic in the recycling bin. We'll talk about the economic shifts that are making recycling programs more costly for cities, and whether you, the consumer, has to end up footing the recycling bill for a zero-waste future. And get your recycling questions ready. We'll be right back to Your Call after the news. Welcome. I'm Henat Baba, sitting in for Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. Glass bottles, aluminum cans, cardboard, and paper, we all know it goes in the blue recycling bin. But that single bin is one of the reasons that the cost of recycling has crept up for cities. It's easier for consumers to put everything in that one bin, but that convenience comes at a price. It costs a lot to sort the stuff later, and when materials come into contact with each other, they can become contaminated and then be less valuable. On top of that, a changing market for recyclables is causing some cities and counties to lose money on recycling, according to media reports. Nationwide, just over a third of trash is recycled. Many cities here in the Bay Area have higher recycling rates. San Francisco diverts 80% of discarded materials from landfills, and it wants to go even further, setting a zero-waste goal by the year 2020. Oakland residents will see garbage collection rates go up by 24% as the city debuts new compost and recycling services for businesses and residents. So, on today's show, we'll explore the challenges cities are facing with their recycling programs. How can they succeed today? With us is Ruth Abbey. She is a recycling consultant with more than 25 years of experience in recycling and composting programs and facility development. She works with municipalities across the country to develop the social and physical infrastructure to achieve zero waste. She serves on the board of directors of Zero Waste USA's Grassroots Recycling Network, and Ruth Abbey is active with the local Sierra Club Zero Waste Committee. Hi, Ruth. Welcome.
Hi, good morning.
And with us also is Tom Padilla, Recycling Director of Stop Waste, and that's a regional intergovernmental agency working to conserve resources and reduce waste in Alameda County. Tom has worked as a recycling professional for 34 years, holding executive and management roles at recycling programs from Santa Cruz to San Francisco to the East Bay. Welcome to the show, Tom.
Good morning.
Hi. And we want to invite you into the conversation. Have you ever wondered what happens to your recyclables or compost after you toss it out? What do you want to know about the recycling process and the recycling economics, how much you are charged and why? Many cities in the Bay Area have set goals to achieve zero waste in the near future. What questions do you have about zero waste and the ability to get there? And how much do you pay now for recycling? What changes do you want to see with your city's recycling program? You can join this conversation by giving us a call at 866-798-TALK. That's 866-798-8255. Or send us an email at feedback@yourcallradio.org or post a comment at yourcallradio.org. Lots to talk about, Ruth. The Washington Post reported cities are losing money on recycling, that recycling is basically no longer profitable. They're not making money. And some cities are even having to pay to have their recyclables disposed of. Why is this happening? What economic shifts are happening, Ruth Abbey?
Well, I think a few things are going on. Part of the reason for the story is there is kind of a recycling facility crisis going on across the country, not particularly in our neck of the woods, but in other parts of the country where the recycling facilities have been designed for a certain type of material. We used to have a lot of paper, we used to have a lot of newspapers, you know, office paper, and those recycling facilities where the materials are processed were designed to handle a lot of paper. But as you probably are aware, we're not getting a newspaper anymore, the newspapers are thinner, and we're getting a lot more plastic. And plastic can be recycled, it is marketable, but it's a little more difficult to handle, and so there's been a shift in what we actually recycle.
Interesting. And so why are recycling programs becoming less profitable? What's happening in the market?
Well, some of it has to be with not keeping up with the times. Some of the recycling facilities are older and haven't been designed to process the new types of materials that are recyclable. In our area, a lot of communities can recycle aseptic packages, juice boxes, milk cartons. If you see on your supermarket shelves, more and more of our products, we're not getting stuff in tin cans anymore. We're getting them in paper that is has foil on it, aluminum foil on it, plastic on it. That's a little bit more difficult to recycle. A lot of our recycling facilities can handle it, but some of them can't. And so that change and shift of what is actually out there in the marketplace impacts what can be recycled at the recycling facility.
And so are there ever any conversations between the manufacturers who make the materials and the recycling industry to kind of bridge that gap and fix that problem?
It's a really good idea. We have kind of a balance, though. Part of the reason that our product packages have shifted is because of lightweighting. So, for example, you know, plastic is lighter than tin, is lighter than aluminum. Tin and aluminum might be more recyclable, but plastic is lighter. And those aseptic packages, you know, that you get your juices in or your soups in, those don't have to be refrigerated. And so you're actually saving energy in transportation and in the weight of the package. And so, you know, we're balancing other types of environmental goals, such as reducing greenhouse gases, reducing transportation costs, by lightweighting our packaging and changing our packaging. So it is a balance. It's a shift in how we think about things. You know, the glass package, for example, is extremely recyclable, but it's also very heavy. So if you're going to be moving it across the country, you know, in a diesel truck or even by rail, you can see how that would be a very impactful from a transportation greenhouse gas perspective, even if at the end of the line that glass package is a lot more recyclable or easier to recycle than that aseptic package or that that plastic package.
And Tom Padilla, let's kind of localize this a little bit. San Francisco uses something called single stream recycling. So bottles and cans and paper are put into one bin, while Berkeley, for example, uses a dual stream method. Can you talk about the differences between the two?
The dual stream is designed to keep paper products separate from the bottles and cans, the containers. Sometimes when glass bottles break, it contaminates the paper. A lot of recyclers believe that the important thing was the move from bins that the driver had to bend over and pick up and dump into the truck to carts, and that it's not so important whether the cart is one big cart with materials mixed that we call single stream, or whether it's a divided cart, a split cart that Berkeley uses with fibers on one side and containers on the other. The important thing is the increased volume and the convenience of wheeling a cart out to the curb. Across the country, I think that there's going to be a move to carts, whether it's to two separate carts, a divided cart, or one all-encompassing cart. It will be a local decision.
We have a lot of email coming in from our listeners, so this is obviously a topic that is touching many of our listeners. If you would like to give us a call also with your questions about recycling or comments, give us a call at 866-798-8255, and the email is feedback@yourcallradio.org. But for now, I mean, Tom, can you give us an idea regionally? Ruth was talking about kind of the national situation, but if you can break down for us, for example, in San Francisco, Oakland, San Jose, you've worked in these cities. What is the landscape like here in terms of costs and whether they will rise and who will pay for this?
Well, municipal recycling programs have always had a net cost associated with them. The cost of collecting, processing, and marketing the materials has always been greater than the revenue received from the sale of those materials. What is happening now in some parts of the country where a municipal workers may collect the material and deliver to a regional materials recovery facility, or MRF, it's possible that they may have been getting paid $20 a ton for those collected materials in the past, and now they're being charged $20 a ton. There's always been cyclical price swings in the value of secondary materials. It's just sort of crossed that threshold at that particular point in the chain. Locally, in the Bay Area, most communities have exclusive franchises with a single hauler who both collects, processes, and markets the materials, and those costs are bundled into the cost of a garbage service charge to the generator, the resident, or business. And so what it means when prices fall, there's a higher net cost. When they climb, there's a lower net cost. But there's always been a net cost.
Okay, I'm going to start going to the emails. People are sending it feedback@yourcallradio.org. Many people have questions about recycling, and I'll just shoot them at Ruth Abbey and Tom Padilla to try to answer them. So let's take this first email. Is from, let me get this here. Charles says, what percent of what goes into blue bins that goes into blue bins can actually be recycled rather than landfill? How is a blue bin sorted? He's heard that glass bottles break in the trucks, and once they're broken, they can't be recycled. Ruth, the blue bin, can you answer Charles's question, please, about how it's sorted and about the glass bottles breaking? Is that true that when they're broken, they can't be recycled?
Sure. You know, actually, glass is somewhat difficult, but it really depends on the recycling facility or the materials recovery facility that the materials are delivered to. So when it goes into your blue bin, or in the case of Oakland, it's actually a gray bin. So for your Oakland listeners, we're talking about the recycling bin, the gray bin. But when it gets into your recycling bin and is delivered to the facility, it is handled in a number of different ways. Sometimes it's more automated. Sometimes there are more workers that are sorting the materials. In our area, we have a very good market for glass. And so even if glass is broken and it goes to the bottom of the sorting facility and is sifted out of everything else, broken glass pieces can still be further recycled through a further processing through a glass beneficiator, and then are sold locally to our wineries. The Gallo Winery, for example, in the Central Valley consumes a lot of our glass, and even broken glass can be recycled into new bottles. Other parts of the country aren't as lucky as we are. They don't have the glass beneficiation, in other words, that secondary processing for the glass, and they also don't have really great markets for glass. And so other areas of the country, glass is more of a problem. Mm-hmm. But in our area, our glass is highly recycled, so don't worry about it. Recycle your glass.
Recycle your glass. Tom Padilla, Charles also wants to know, what is the biggest thing a consumer can do differently to help out?
Well, the important thing is to put the right materials in the right bins. Typically, at a good program, we'll actually market and recycle over 90% by weight of the materials placed in the recycling cart or the recycling container. Problems arise when people put garbage in the recycling, and of course, when they put recyclables in the garbage. We want people to put the right materials in the right place. That is the most important thing that people can do.
All right. Diane is asking, isn't the looting of aluminum cans a big reason why recycling does not pay? Ruth?
You know, that could be considered a problem. In all of our communities, we really try and restrict what we call scavenging, where folks are coming to your curb and picking material out of your bin when it's placed at the curb. That is a problem. If there's more highly valuable material like aluminum cans or bottles that have redemption value on them, if there's more material like that in your recycling bin, then the city or the collector is going to get a higher price. But we've been living with scavenging for a really long time in the Bay Area, and so I don't think that that's a kind of a current impact. I mean, it's a kind of a nuisance. In some cities, they enforce that that restriction more than in other places. But I think that, you know, both the communities and the private sector service providers are kind of used to the fact that a lot of their stuff is going to get, the cream is going to be taken off the top, and they'll be having to process the rest of the materials.
This is Your Call. I'm Hannah Baba. That's Ruth Abbey. And with us also is Tom Padilla. We're talking recycling. And the number to give us a call at is 866-798-TALK, 866-798-8255. If you have a question about recycling or the cost of recycling or the changes in the recycling systems, give us a call or shoot us an email. Let's go to a caller. Let's talk to Ralph in San Rafael. Hi, welcome.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. My question has to do with the CRV value of a deposit of either 5 or 10 cents on bottles and cans and plastic bottles. Is there a place to go to see a review of how much money comes in, how it's dispersed, how much money is collected from the individuals, or rather given back to, how many people turn in those bottles, cans, for actual return of their deposits?
Okay, thanks for the question. Tom Padilla, you want to take that one?
The California Redemption Program is administered by a state department called Cal Recycle. And at their website, they have all the data on total number of containers that were paid into the system and the amount paid out, the recycling rates by type of material. Plastic bottles, aluminum cans, glass bottles.
Okay, great. That's Tom Padilla. Now, I want to switch this a little bit to consumer cost. The Bay Area News Group reported that in Oakland, rates for single-family homes with a 32-gallon cart will increase nearly 24%, and they're going to pay $36.82 cents a month as the city debuts new compost and recycling services for businesses and residents. Apartment dwellers and condo dwellers, for the first time, they'll have a guaranteed compost service. So, Tom, can you tell us about some of the changes that are happening in Oakland?
The agency that I work for, Stop Waste, has adopted a countywide mandatory recycling ordinance for businesses and multifamily dwellings. Each city has had the option to opt in or out. Over 90% of the county is opted in, including the city of Oakland. And that requires the ability to separate food scraps as well as traditional bottles, cans, paper, recyclables. The requirement for the food scraps for the multifamily and businesses will not kick in for another year in Oakland, but in anticipation of that, they built this provision into the new services that just started this month.
And do you see that cost rising even more in the future?
Well, I think that the city of Oakland had not gone out to bid for garbage service for a long, long time. In fact, I don't know that they had ever gone out to bid for garbage service. They had gone out for residential recycling in the past. I think part of the price increase was simply a catch-up with current costs that the past CPI increases in the old contract had not really kept up with the revenue requirements of the service. So that's part of the issue involved in this price increase that we're seeing. I'm an Oakland resident. I just got my bill.
So what do you think?
I think that it still is a pretty good value, the service we get for trucks driving to our driveway every week to collect our organics, recyclables, and garbage.
And do you see this cost increasing for residents nearby in other cities? Will other cities follow suit?
Yeah, there has been a general trend of when cities have gone out to bid for new contracts, typically a 7-year or so contract, that they have seen significant increases because, in general, the annual increases built into old contracts were not sufficient to keep up with rising costs.
Let's go to more of your calls at 866-798- talk, 866-798-8255, about recycling. Let's talk to Pat in San Francisco. Welcome.
Yeah, last year I was cleaning out the basement of my building, and I had accumulated a bunch of scrap iron, non-ferrous metals, some copper, some brass. I went to take it to the scrap metal yard, and they refused to take it because I am not a contractor. And I went to another one, same thing. The other place I could go was over in the East Bay somewhere, and I wasn't going to drive all the way to the East Bay, so I wound up just dumping it into the regular trash barrel to let the city haul it away.
So you tried, and it didn't happen. You had to put it in the trash.
Yeah.
Okay.
I found that very frustrating.
Okay. Thanks, Pat. Any answers for Pat here? He had a lot. What did that mean, what they told him, that he wasn't a contractor? Does anybody know? Ruth, do you know about
that? Well, I think part of the issue there is that we've had a real trend of actually stealing of copper and stealing of other precious metals from buildings. You know, this is something that happened during the recession. We saw a lot of folks that, you know, and so the scrap metal dealers have been impacted by that, and they are restricted in terms of who they can buy materials from because of that. There are more restrictions. There's more tracing because, you know, so someone will go steal somebody's iron fence, try and bring it to a scrap metal dealer. The scrap metal dealer doesn't know whether that's a legitimate cleaning out of your basement or taking down of your fence, or if you stole it from somebody. And so I think what you are experiencing is kind of a crackdown on that of really trying to make sure that the folks who are stealing metals are not getting it's not convenient for them to get the money back from that, and it's not worth their time to steal metal.
How do you think that can be fixed, though? How can authorities kind of differentiate between the two?
Yeah, I think that it's hard. I think that when you're seeing really large loads of materials, it's very difficult. And that's why I think the scrap metal dealers that he went to in San Francisco really only want to buy scrap metals from contractors that they know, because then they know it's legitimate. I think it's a difficult problem, and I think there are other opportunities to recycle scrap metal. So, for example, at the transfer station on Pennell Avenue across from a Candlestick, they can accept scrap metal. Recology can also accept scrap metal. They have a bulky item collection program where they can accept scrap metal. So you can get your scrap metal recycled. You can't just always very easily get your scrap metal paid for because of that concern about fraud and stealing.
Okay, thank you. Let's take another caller. Let's talk to David in Oakland. Hi, David. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you. I'm calling. I live in Oakland, and I have twice observed in my neighborhood waste management employees who are collecting garbage and recycling on trucks where they have a lift in the front where they put garbage on a garbage container on one side and a recycling container on the other, and the truck lifts them both up into two separate compartments in the truck. I've observed twice the employees putting basically either two garbage or two recycling containers side by side, and therefore dumping the wrong material into the wrong container, presumably because it saves them time. Because they're rushing through the neighborhood and trying to get everything done. So I guess I have a couple of questions. One is, are your guests aware of this happening? I'm on a listserv in our neighborhood. Other people have observed this. And two, is the new arrangement with different collection in Oakland going to be a solution to this problem? And if not, if it's happening in other areas too, what can be done about this?
Okay, thank you. Thank you, David. So, Tom Padilla, you're from Oakland. He's seeing this happening in his neighborhood. And we will talk about this. I want to talk about zero waste as well after this short break. Keep those phone calls coming at 866-798-8255. Also email us at feedback@yourcallradio.org. We're going to take a short break and come back to answer more of your questions on recycling.
This is your call on local public radio, KALW San Francisco. If you have a perspective that you've not yet heard in today's discussion or a question you feel should be answered, we invite you to join our conversation. The number is 866-798-TALK. It's a toll-free call, 866-798-8255. The email address is feedback@yourcallradio.org, or you can simply post your question or comment on the website, yourcallradio.org. Coming up at 11 o'clock, World Have Your Say from the BBC, and then at noon today, it's Ira Glass and This American Life. Following that at 1, Glenn Washington and Snap Judgment, all here on Local Public Radio, KALW San Francisco.
And welcome back. This is Your Call. I'm Hannah Baba, sitting in for Rose Aguilar. Today we're speaking with Ruth Abbey, a recycling consultant who works with municipalities across the country to develop the social and physical infrastructure to achieve zero waste. Also with us on the line today is Tom Padilla, a recycling director for Stop Waste, which is a regional intergovernmental agency working to conserve resources and reduce waste in Alameda County. And we're talking about recycling. The consumer end, the recycling itself, the system, the cost, all of it. So give us a call if you have a question or comment at 866-798-8255 or send us an email at feedback@yourcallradio.org. Tom Padilla, we're going to try and answer the, David's question about him kind of looking around the neighborhood and noticing that the workers, the waste management workers, are not putting the right things in the right bins, and that his neighbors have also noticed this. And he wanted to know if you know of this, and if so, what happens after that?
Well, two parts to David's question. The latter question was, will this be changed under the new contracts?
Right.
And the answer is yes. There are two separate companies. Waste Management will be picking up garbage and compostables, organics. But California Waste Solutions citywide will be picking up single-family and multifamily recyclables. So as far as mixing garbage with recyclables, that shouldn't be happening. Those are two separate trucks, two separate companies. But if there is one truck collecting both organics and garbage and mixing the materials, I would just recommend that anyone jot down all the details they can about the truck number, the time, date, location, and communicate that both to the City of Oakland, their recycling hotline 238-SAVE, S-A-V-E, or to Waste Management, the number on their garbage bill, to report the problem.
And so let's say that happens. It already has happened. They're mixed up. What happens to that waste after that if it's mixed up?
If it was good stuff mixed in the garbage side, that will just get dumped straight into the pit and delivered to the Altamont landfill.
Mm.
If it was garbage mixed into the recyclables or the compostables, that material will get delivered to a separate pile for recovery. If it's in the recyclables, that may get run over a sorting line and sorted out. If it is compostables, that may get delivered to a composting facility where they will attempt to remove the items that shouldn't be there with a either over a belt or just on a floor sort.
So ideally, they will be resorted.
Ideally.
Okay, that word says a lot. So I want to talk about Zero Waste. Ruth Abbey, you serve on the board of directors of Zero Waste USA's grassroots recycling network. So San Francisco has a goal to reach zero waste by the year 2020. That is 5 years from now. So Ruth, what is zero waste and how can the city do that?
Well, so zero waste is kind of an aspirational goal that many communities have set to really set our sights higher and higher. You know, 25 years ago, we didn't think 50% recycling was achievable, and now most of the communities in our area are well above 50%. So the zero waste goal was to say, look, if we really focused and we put a lot of energy and effort into this, could we design our systems to be better? Could we train our constituents to be better? And could we get as close to zero waste as possible? So for the communities that have established a goal of zero waste, will there still be a, you know, some things that are going to end up going to the landfill in 2020? Probably. But by setting that aspirational goal, it's a notification to everybody that we need to try really hard. And as evidenced by the city of San Francisco achieving an 80% diversion rate, we think that by setting a high goal, we can do better and better. So maybe by 2020, we won't be absolutely at zero waste, but we might be very close, 95, 97%. And we think that's a really great goal.
And you work nationally. Has any city in the country reached zero waste already or is close to it?
We don't think so. Among kind of the high-achieving communities, we really see a lot of that in California because we've had so much effort the last 25 years in implementing recycling and composting programs. A lot of other cities on the West Coast, Seattle, Portland, are really striving for zero waste. Across the country, there are many communities that have set an aspirational goal of zero waste. For example, the city of Austin and the city of Dallas in Texas have both set aspirational goals of zero waste, but their goal is to achieve that by 2040. So I think, you know, we'll do a lot better sooner here than the folks across the country.
And what does that mean for the consumer? Will we see the costs go up by 2020? How much will we be paying? Where will that cost go?
You know, the hope is that we'll actually eventually have lower costs, right? Because currently our state of affairs is that we have these large landfills that at one time were very expensive to build, and we are continuing to use them. If we don't ever have to build another new expensive landfill or a new expensive incinerator, and instead we can recycle and compost at a hopefully a lower cost, maybe eventually our costs will go down. If we have less and less and less trash, could we even eliminate our trash can and just have recycling and composting? We're experimenting that within some communities that have gone to very, very little trash. I know that in some neighborhoods of San Francisco, just experimenting with a blue can and a green can and no trash can at all, that might ultimately save money. So I think the hope is that if we get closer and closer to zero waste, we will be able to save money.
Let's read this email from listener Helen. She asks something we talked about a little earlier. Maybe we can elaborate further. Who has the power to pressure manufacturers to design easily recyclable packaging? Would it help to send egregiously mixed containers back to the company itself to dispose of? So again, you know, holding the manufacturers responsible. Tom Padilla, you want to talk about that a little bit? Is that even a chance that it might happen?
I think there have been examples of consumer and environmental pressure, environmental group pressure on manufacturers that has been effective. Ultimately, your dollars that you spend on products is the most powerful signal you can send to manufacturers, but let them know that you're making decisions based on recyclability. As to the advisability or the effectiveness of sending materials back to the manufacturer, I don't know. I won't comment on that. But I think that certainly letting it be known that this is an important criteria for you as a consumer is important to do.
Again, the number if you have a question or comment about recycling for our guests, Ruth Abbey and Tom Padilla, you give us a call at 866-798-8255 or email us feedback@yourcallradio.org. We have a number of listeners on the line. But first, I wanted to ask Ruth, with zero waste coming up, is there any opposition to it at all? Or are we in San Francisco where everybody is saying yes to this?
You know, you do get a little bit of pushback from folks saying, if all we have left are these really hard to recycle things, is it worth the effort to get to absolute zero? And, you know, I would tend to agree with that. The goal is not, you know, absolute empirical zero. It's really to get as much of those recyclable and compostable materials out of the trash and into the right area, and to be more mindful of the materials that you buy. I'll give you a quick example.
Mm-hmm.
My dad's, you know, his doormat was degraded, and we needed to buy a new one. I searched a long time before I could find a doormat that wasn't plastic, that ultimately at the end of its useful life was going to have to be thrown away. I got an all-jute doormat with no plastic backing, specifically because I was thinking about the end of its life, and when it's all worn out, could it be composted instead of put in the trash?
How much did it cost?
Very cheap. A jute doormat is very cheap, but you got to look around for them because a lot of them have those plastic backings.
Okay, we have someone on the line who can talk about zero waste in our city, San Francisco. Kevin Drew is San Francisco's recycling director. Welcome to the show.
Hi.
Hi. So we've been talking about your city, and here you are. Why don't you tell us about zero waste and how close we are to that goal that's coming up in 5 years?
Well, I think Tom and Ruth have both done a good job explaining it and describing it in general and specifically really in San Francisco. It's an aspirational goal, but it is we are going to keep driving towards it as long as it's practical. And there are many practical things that we're doing. I wanted to correct one thing that Ruth said about that we haven't eliminated the bin, the black bin, yet in San Francisco. We have a number of pilots right now that are reducing the size or reducing the frequency, like going to less than weekly pickup every other week for the black bin, and we are looking at talking with some commercial businesses about whether they could eliminate the black bin because they just don't use anything that needs to go in it. We're pushing the edges as much as we possibly can, and we're trying to find ways to work our way down. It is always a balance between those programs, the cost of those programs, and kind of consumer acceptability. I think the thing that we really need is we do need people's help. As much as we accept zero waste and we accept the recycling and composting programs in San Francisco, there's so much more that people can do. There's so much more kind of mindfulness, as Ruth put it, that people can bring to their lives. And we know that's confusing. It's really hard to find the right messaging that gets the question across or gets the question answered easily and quickly, and at the same time gives enough detail for people to pick up and say, what do I do with my gum, or what do I do with, you know, some little teeny thing. So that's a start of where we're going.
And San Francisco's Altamont landfill is under contract by January 2016. You know, what will running out of capacity there? So what will happen by next year?
We're working on another landfill agreement and a place for their material to go when that contract ends. It's uncertain when it ends because there's a tonnage number, and when we get to the tonnage number, we're done. So it's a little bit of projecting that goes on there. And it's complicated finding landfill space in the Bay Area, and it's contentious because there's money involved. And so we're working on solutions to that, to the next landfill. We actually have an agreement for another landfill, and we're going through the process of getting that approved. So I did want to go back to the scrap metal question, because that was kind of an interesting one. And I wanted to tell the listener that he should have been able to get his scrap metal taken care of at the scrap yard in San Francisco. Mm. We did pass an ordinance restricting the use of scrap metal dealers by the general public if they were repeat customers. But I did talk with the police department actually before I called to confirm that if you are a one-time user, you can just tell that to the scrap dealer, and they should take it back. If they don't, you can call the Jim O'Meara at the police department, and he'll make it happen. The idea was to restrict people who were using it illegally or using it, abusing the scrap metal market, but not to let the individual not be able to get rid of their material properly, which which the caller did a great job of sorting it, then to throw it into the trash was certainly the wrong thing. Ruth made the point about taking it to the transfer station, but he could have called for a bulky item pickup, and they would have sorted it out that way. That's the individual pickup at your household for odd items.
You get those like twice a year?
Yes.
Okay. So that's Kevin Drew, San Francisco's recycling director. If you have a question for him about recycling in San Francisco, you can email us at feedback@yourcallradio.org. Now let's go from San Francisco to Santa Cruz. Let's talk to Tim in Santa Cruz. Hi, welcome.
Thank you. Good morning. Tim Bratton. We're from Gray Bears here in Santa Cruz. We're a large independent recycling center. And I had a couple questions for your guests this morning. One is their general outlook on commodity prices. We've seen price drops of 30, 40, 50% and more in anything from metal to other commodities, especially cardboard. And if they have an idea on the international market that could help, as those prices fall, of course, there needs to be more charge to the individual recycling community. And the other question is about styrofoam. What are you doing with styrofoam? Do you have a solution that's working? Mm. Are people able to bring it? You can't commingle, obviously, because it'll definitely contaminate the recycling materials. So do you have a solution for that?
Okay. Thank you, Tim. Tom Padilla, you want to take that on?
In terms of fluctuating commodity values, that, as I stated before, that's always been the case. Old corrugated containers in truckload quantities or container load quantities delivered to the Miller dock has fluctuated from probably, you know, $50 to $200 a ton over the last couple decades. So if I had a crystal ball, I would be retired. If I could predict commodity values, but that's always been the case, and I think that that there, you know, it will return. It will get an uptick. I just can't say when or how much.
And styrofoam.
Styrofoam. I think that there are some recycling opportunities for it. I think a lot of manufacturers have switched to, when they have pressure or an incentive to do so, switch to molded fiber, molded pulp packaging for product stabilization and shock absorption. Styrofoam is a problem. For peanuts, one of the best items is reuse. And for the block styrofoam, if you're a commercial generator generating tons of it at a time, there are probably options, recycling options for you and densification options to get it to market in a more economical manner than driving around truckloads of feathers. But in general, I think it's best to try and find alternatives.
Hmm. Let's go to more of our calls. Let's talk to Sharon in Oakland. Welcome to your call.
Hi. I'm trying to find out, please. I just recently paid my new waste management bill and it was, you know, sticker shock. What's going on with this new monthly recycle per unit? I live in a duplex. It's only just two units, and they've now levied on it, it looks like, an additional $9.17 per unit per month. So what's going on with that? And it seems to be rather stiff hitting small, you know, multi-units, you know, houses, units that are like two or three, four. If someone can explain that to me, please.
Okay,
and
thank
what
you.
Are we getting for it?
And you're in Oakland, right?
Yeah, and what are we getting for it?
Mm-hmm. Tom?
I cannot answer that question. I would recommend the caller contact either the city of Oakland and or waste management to inquire. Actually, the city would be the best.
Ruth, did you want to say something?
Yeah, just that I think that what we're seeing is as the city is going more for a cost of service approach in delivering services, both to single family, multifamily, and commercial businesses. And I think that what's going on there is that it really does cost for us to come, you know, for the city, for their contractor to come and pick up the materials. And so I think in that fee, in that monthly fee, the point is that we have to pay for that infrastructure. And so we are just seeing, we've always been paying for recycling, but now we're seeing that as a separate fee to show that there really is a cost associated with it.
Okay, let's go to Seth in San Francisco. Seth, are you there? Hi.
Yes, I am. Let me turn my speakers on. Okay, yes, I'm here. So my issue is with manufacturers continuing to produce their products, package their products in containers like toothpaste containers, which are very complicated to recycle. You need to cut them open, clean them out, separate the cap from the tube, make sure it's totally clean, and then possibly it can be recycled. The same holds true with many items you find in the construction industry. Lots of containers, caulking, for example, and they're very, very difficult to recycle. So that's the subject I want to hear addressed.
And you actually did something about it, didn't you? You called Colgate?
I have a stack of toothpaste tubes waiting until I can figure out what to do with them.
All right, toothpaste tubes. We're getting calls about all kinds of different stuff. Ruth, Abby, what to do about those pesky toothpaste tubes?
Yeah, you know, I think it is a problem. I mean, again, back to the balance. We have to balance, you know, the maintaining the quality of the product, you know, the caulking that he mentioned. I mean, it's going to be difficult to design a container that will preserve the product for a long period of time and be able to squeeze it out and still in its, you know, semi-liquid form and keep it that way. So, I mean, what the manufacturers have emphasized is product reliability. And if we ask them to focus on recyclability of their package, I think they will. But up until now, you know, they've just been focusing on the product quality and not so much on the recyclability of the ultimate package. I do think manufacturers respond to consumer pressure. They also respond to state laws and local laws. And we do have examples of, you know, product bans and recycled content and recyclability legislation. But again, we have to strike that balance. I mean, we want products to be delivered to us that are fresh and can be used and remain in the form that we want them to be. And so we have to strike this balance. So ultimately, if we still have, you know, if we're at 99% and we still have toothpaste tubes that we have to throw away, maybe we've gotten as close to zero waste as we possibly can. But, you know, we still have so much to do to keep the recyclable material and the compostable material out of the trash. We can still be working on these problem products as we go along.
One more question about an item. Email from Helen. She says, most of my plastic is soft, like plastic bags and plastic wrap. And she wants to know if there's anywhere in the East Bay to recycle them. She is in Berkeley. So soft plastics. Tom, any idea? Or Ruth?
Well, I was just going to say, you know, clean plastic bags, you know, that you get your newspapers in, or cleaner bags or grocery bags that we may still have. Any of those clean plastic bags can still be recycled, and we can often do that at the grocery stores. They will accept recyclable plastics that are clean. In some communities, Castro Valley, for example, I believe Oakland has a new program. They have a bag in a bag program. You put all of your plastics, your clean, recyclable plastic bags inside another bag, and then that will be processed at the recycling facility. The only difficulty is if you combine it with your other materials, it might get, you know, contaminated. So I take my plastic bags, including the wrapping that's around the toilet paper, around the paper towels. I take that to my grocery store, and they bail that with all of their other plastics, and that it ultimately gets recycled.
What's your grocery store, if I may ask?
Oh, well, all the major chains, you know, Lucky.
They all do that?
They all still accept plastic for recycling.
Mm-hmm. Okay. We only have a couple of minutes left, so I really want to kind of get looking forward, what to expect. Let's start with Kevin Drew, director of San Francisco Recycling. What can San Francisco residents expect? Kevin is not with us anymore. Thank you for joining us, Kevin. Let's go to Tom Padilla then. Some final thoughts about, you know, where we're going and what it means for the consumer and for the local economies as well.
Well, I think that our big focus at Stop Waste is trying to get people to put the right materials in the right bin all the time. Even though we have very high participation rates in recycling programs in the East Bay, in 2008 we did our last comprehensive study. We've done other studies since then that still show that a lot of food scraps and compostable paper, paper plates, paper towels, napkins, etc., are going into the garbage, and they should be going into the green cart. Similarly, we have very high capture rates on a lot of the bottles, cans, and paper, but there still is some of those materials going into the garbage can. So our big push is going to be trying to starve that garbage can, reduce it in size to the absolute minimum, and get the right materials in the right place. That's going to help with a lot of climate change plans for different cities, and I think that overall it will not increase costs. Costs may increase overall due to other factors, just costs of labor and health care and fuel or other things, but I think that it will have a positive effect on the local economy. When you use things once, bury them in the ground, cover them with dirt, and leave them in a landfill, there's no more economic value or activity associated with those materials. When you recycle them, you're having transportation, manufacturing, sales, direct and indirect job creation from keeping those materials in a circular economy.
And Lee, a listener who is driving, just wanted to call in and answer the question about the plastic bags, saying people can reuse their plastic bags. Thank you for that, Lee. Ruth, Abby, where do you see us going in terms of this zero waste goal in San Francisco and elsewhere in the country? Will other places get there before us?
I'm really optimistic about how things are going, and part of it is because we've been working for many years to recycle, only a few years about recycling and composting, but we're now kind of at a tipping point where in our Bay Area community, almost every city has a recycling program, almost every city has composting for food scraps, and once we all have those uniform programs where everything we know is recyclable, everything that we know is compostable, both at our home and single-family homes and apartments, at commercial businesses, at our schools. Once we all have that more consistent programming, as we're doing in Alameda County and San Francisco and around the region, we will be able to get to that tipping point, and everyone will know better how to do it better, and we'll just get better and better at it.
All right.
And we'll just see those leftovers that have to go to landfill, and we'll work on those problem products, those toothpaste tubes and those other materials. We'll work on those going forward.
Final message to consumers listening to right now.
Recycle and compost. We have the infrastructure. We finally have the infrastructure across the Bay Area. We need to use our existing infrastructure and then work on our problem products. And join us. We can do it. And I think that the communities have really stepped up to the challenge to meet our climate issues and our recycling and our landfill shortages. We can do it.
Great. Thank you so much. We will leave it there. We've been speaking with Ruth Abbey, a recycling consultant. She works with municipalities across the country to develop infrastructure to achieve zero waste. Thank you for joining us. Tom Padilla is recycling director for Stop Waste, the regional organization conserving resources and reducing waste in Alameda County. With us also was Kevin Drew, the San Francisco recycling director. We'll put a link to the web resources on our website, yourcallradio.org. It's also where you can post comments and continue this conversation and ask questions. Thank you for joining us. Thank you for your calls and emails. I'm Hannah Baba. This is Your Call. How is the global capital flow affecting the Bay Area? On the next Your Call, we'll discuss the global real estate market. One of the world's largest real estate developers, Shanghai-based Greenland Holding Group, is in talks to invest billions of dollars in the Bay Area for the first time. Last year, foreign investors purchased more than $92 billion worth of existing U.S. homes. How's the global real estate market affecting the housing crunch in the Bay Area? It's Your Call with Rose Aguilar and you.
Support for Your Call comes from the listeners of KALW. To listen to past shows or sign up for our podcast, visit yourcallradio.org. Nock Nguyen produces the show, Malihe Razazan is senior producer, and Matt Martin is executive producer. Phil Hartman is our chief engineer, and Joe Burke is our studio engineer. Our theme music was composed and performed by Live Human. Special thanks to our partners at KUSP in Santa Cruz. You can email us at feedback@yourcallradio.org.